But yeah, she bought Rhythm Heaven Fever because of me too. Like she, I like that she, it really means a lot that she tries to interject herself into my interests.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's fucking sexy.
Yeah, it is.
Just like Devoid and his editing skills.
Yep. Turns me on. And with that.
Welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 42, and we are recording this on Tuesday, January 8th, 2013. I'm your host, as usual, Steven, as in on boards, Dr. Finkelstein. And the other half of this podcast duet tonight is none other than...
Hey, this is Joe, or as in on the boards, Ninsage.
Yeah, not much has changed on that front, I guess, huh?
No, not really.
No. So, I know that... The last 2012 episode just kind of released recently, so we had quite a bit of a break between the last ones, even though this one just was put out. So tell me before we get into this, Joe, how was your holiday break?
It was fine. It was quick, fairly uneventful. At this point, the traveling to and from the in-laws and such is kind of like clockwork, so...
What's the distance?
It's Buffalo to Chester, New Jersey. So it's, I think it's like a little over 5 hours in the car, something like that. So
not shabby.
Yeah. I mean, it's not too bad. And we usually manage to get good weather. So, yep, it was fine. I don't know. It's kind of a lackluster holiday in terms of events, but still good. Still a good time. Mm. Just nothing major to report. No crazy stories or anything. So what about yours?
Yeah, no, mine was pretty uneventful too. I took a trip out to Indianapolis, which is about the same time, about 5.5 hours for me. So we both had those commutes, although I wasn't so lucky because the Midwest got hit with quite a snowstorm a few days before Christmas.
Sure.
And then even more so again on, it was right after Christmas, but... But yeah, so driving to Indianapolis was pretty challenging, a little slick.
Oh, yeah.
But it was all good. trying to think. This is something I can mention by now playing. But no, me and my girlfriend, we bonded quite heavily over Nintendo Land and playing in particular the Metroid Blast, I think it's called.
Okay.
But it's one of the, of the 12 attractions, and she would be the on-foot Samus Aran, and I would be the in-the-ship Samus. And we just were kicking ass left and right, blowing away space pirates and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a nice bonding moment, just chilling on the couch. And I call her my galactic girlfriend, as cheesy as that is. But she thinks it's
cool in these circles.
It is. Oh, yeah, she loved it. So I made great progress through that. And I didn't get a lot of... video games this Christmas. I generally don't because I always just buy what I want. But I did get a board game, which I actually will go into and now playing momentarily, because even though it's not a video game, who says that we have to limit it to that, I guess.
Sure, you looked at it, right? But, you used your eyes. That's a video.
And actually, I do have it on Steam, so I'll go into that too. But yeah, so it was all around pretty good. Like you said, it was too short. But nothing to complain. I'm glad that you had a good one. One thing that you and I both did was, and I know not too many people did it this year, probably because of the various hitches with the Nintendo service, but we had Secret Santa this year, and which we've done, I think, the past 2 years. But it was a pretty good turnout for, what it was. There was like 7 or 8 of us. I actually got you, and Game Wizard got me. And who did
I got
you?
Flute.
Flute, that's right. Okay.
Flute.
Yeah, so it was good.
Yep. What I think 7 or 8 people for anything involving requesting people spend money is probably a decent amount of people. So
yeah, just hopefully, you know, Nintendo opens up the doors in terms of, I know they don't have a Wii U virtual console yet, but I just read today that apparently they're still working on it and they want to have gamepad support. So that hopefully will be coming down the line. But you can't even gift on the 3DS, which is just really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, because I was actually listening to another podcast, completely unrelated, but they were mentioning, you know, how like the virtual console on Wii U is kind of like non-existent at this point. But right.
There's an eShop, so you would assume, but not a virtual console.
Right, so you would assume that they must be putting something together, right? I mean, because it's basically free money for them, releasing virtual console games, so why would they ever stop, right?
Right. Although the big concern, of course, that everyone's having, including myself, is whether or not they're going to make us buy the same stuff we've already purchased on the Wii.
Yeah, I would hope not, but, well, okay, again, I don't have a Wii U, so I defer to you, but, like, you can transfer games from your Wii to the Wii U, right?
Yeah.
It's just that right now you can only access them in Wii mode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When you're in Wii mode, there's even like a Wii eShop or a Wii Virtual Console, like that whole thing.
Right.
I haven't tested it myself, but from what I've heard, you know, you even boot into that on its own, you know.
So where are those games stored then? Is it just an SD card? Or?
Yeah, I've heard complaints that, well, no, I think you can transfer the games to the system, but like, yeah, it's in its own little separate partition almost on the hard drive. You know, you can't. Okay. I don't know if you can see them currently with the Wii U. You know.
So if it's just a matter of accessing that, I mean, I know Nintendo is a business, but I can't imagine they would be so dickish as to when, like, if data were actually on your system's hard drive, that they would not allow you to.
Well, what's also frustrating, though, that doesn't even relate to that so much, is, like, I haven't transferred my Wii to my Wii U due to fears of incompatibility and other things. And it's like, you know what, it's working just fine, so I'll leave it there for now. Mm-hmm. However, what if I want to be able to play my Dr. Mario Online RX on my Wii U, but I don't want to transfer my stuff over? You know, that's almost unfair for me to, like, my account should be linked to it. And I know my Club Nintendo account definitely, I guess it's not linked to my Wii, but it's definitely linked to my Wii U, and they know what game. Well, no, they do know what games I've purchased, I think, because I've connected my Wii itself to my Club Nintendo account. So in theory, there is a way for them to know, and I guess I could purchase them on my Wii U for free and then sell my Wii. But for God's sake, Nintendo, who's doing that? Like, who's going to take the time? How is this a big money loss? You know what I'm saying? At this point.
Yeah.
So on.
No, I mean, I don't know. I probably have more faith in the company than most people, but I would assume that these things will all be sorted out. I know that it's a pain that they weren't ready from the get-go, and a lot of people could say there's no excuse for that, but I don't know. I have to figure they're coming eventually.
I think best case scenario, they're just skipping over the Wii U generation with this, and they're currently focusing on the next Wii's virtual console, so they can make sure they have it at launch. Complete sarcasm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would,
but I feel like it would take them a whole fucking generation of working on it before they actually have it at launch. That's
well,
the premise
just,
of the joke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't say that Nintendo has ever treated anything involving the internet as a priority. And that's just their philosophy. I mean, I find it funny how, you know, when you fill out surveys for Club Nintendo points, how many of them ask you about, like, well, you know, did this game get you to hook up your device to the internet? Like, was this the main reason you hooked up to the internet, or did you hook up to the internet while you were playing the game? Like, as if they're still focus testing the idea of online exchanges, you know, and like the significance of the internet in their gaming world, you know? It's just kind of weird. But on the other hand, I mean, I didn't have to do anything to get the surveys for the eShop game that I purchased to show up on my Club Nintendo. So as you were talking about, I mean, they do have some connections, you know, some link between your system and some kind of account. So it doesn't seem like it'd be that far of a walk to just get them all unified.
It's one thing for me to say, like, the Wii to the Wii U, but people are saying, you know, will we get 3DS virtual console to be on our Wii U? And that's a valid question as well, because, like you just said, Nintendo can see that because they put quizzes or surveys on your account when you buy something off the 3DS eShop right now. So if you buy the Mega Man series 1 through 6 over the next few months, that should transfer over in theory.
Sure.
It'd be cheap not to.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And I would, man, you know, like I own 5 out of 6 of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but for some reason, like when they went for sale on the eShop, I was like, should I start buying them? And I just.
Okay. So you own the actual cartridges, you're saying?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Not the, virtual console downloads.
Yeah, no, I own 4 of the 6 myself.
I could never find Mega Man 4 at a reasonable price or even usually find it. Which ones are you missing?
I'm missing 3 and 6. So I have 1, 2, 4, and 5.
Uh-huh. Were you the one that I was talking to about 6
yes.
recently? Yes.
Because I wanted to put it on my Secret Santa list as a possible choice, and that's the one Mega Man game currently not on the Wii Virtual Console.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
But it's going to be on the 3DS one, like, soon, or already is, or something.
From what I've heard, they're going to dole out one a month.
Oh, okay.
I had first heard it was going to be across the whole year, but then someone said recently, and someone who I guess has no credibility other than I read it, but they're going to have theirs in, like, I guess in June it would be, so not
too far
off. They'll
be releasing one every month leading up to the epic announcement that Capcom has canceled Mega Man as
a... And closed their doors.
Guys, yep. Congratulations. Thanks for playing. Go fuck yourselves.
That should be the end credits of all 6 rounds on the virtual console.
Yep.
But anyway, so... That was somehow our holiday break, being fucked by Capcom. I don't know.
Well,
yeah,
not for, you gifted me Mega Man 9, which was very
that's
cool.
That's true. Yes,
I had played it before, but we did it on a friend's PlayStation, and so I had just played it. I didn't feel the need to buy it again, but now I would like to own it in some capacity. And
you know, Mega Man 9 was what got me back into, you know, Mega Man gaming. So. You know, not to slander you with, you know, you're saying it's challenging, because it is a challenging game, but the fact that I've beaten that game and a few of, you know, the others in the series, most that I've played actually, makes me feel like maybe my gaming skills did get better since I was this young, because I sucked at Mega Man back in the day.
Well, now, which one, do you remember which ones you sucked at? Because it's kind of funny how, like, inconsistently challenging the series has been.
That's true. Let's see. Mega Man 5 was challenging for me when I was growing up. Mega Man 2, I didn't beat any of them back in the day.
Really?
But I got farther in, like, Mega Man 2 than other ones. I could get pretty much to the parts where you end up fighting all the bosses again, you know?
Uh-huh.
I could usually get to that point. Mega Man 1, I can't even get past Guts Man or, like, any... I can't get past shit in that game. And actually, I was actually watching a video of it on the internet last night, and I still lost. And I was watching a video. So... That's how bad at the game I am.
Mega Man 1 is pretty hard. I think it's funny going from 1 to 2 is like the biggest leap, because 1 is one of the hardest in the series, and 2 is, I would say, unquestionably the easiest. So
yeah, I mean, Mega Man 1 existed. Someone bitch slapped it really hard, and then Mega Man 2 happened.
Yep.
And then after that, it kind of grew a little bit more...
Yeah.
It grew back to itself a little bit more.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like elastic, like settling... In the middle, like someone pulled it and it was like really hard, way too easy, and then it would like slowly get into its kind of groove there.
You know, and I can see that having happened, because like if you think about, I don't know the time frames, I don't have them in front of me, but like Ninja Gaiden and other games that were really balls hard back in
yep.
the day, that was kind of a staple of the NES era
yeah.
in many respects. So I can see why they would have wanted to make Mega Man really challenging, but then they're like, oh, whoa, okay. Like, I don't even know how the engineers of these games could really play these that efficiently. But, I mean, somebody has to be able to be pretty good at it for them to release it, so.
You would think so.
Not to digress any further, we do have some other things to talk about tonight. I'm glad you had a nice holiday, and, you know, we'll be back here in 11 months doing the same thing. And
that's the plan.
Yeah, so Secret Santa, you know, it was pretty small. Hopefully next year it will be even bigger with more options and everything, but it was still nice, and I appreciate everyone who participated. You know, you guys are pretty kick-ass, so. Oh, I guess I'll say what I got. I got Secret of Mana, which I have never played before, which is blasphemous for many to consider. But
I think you'll enjoy it. I think that's the kind of game that would probably really hold up, even playing it for the first time in 2013.
That's what I'm hoping. I mean, it's supposed to be like a Zelda-esque, you know, RPG, like Chrono Trigger, Zelda kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I love both those, so.
I mean, it's all... Well, have you played any of it yet, or no?
No, I haven't even booted on my Wii since I downloaded the game. I've been too busy in the other games that I'll mention shortly, and then work started again. So,
well, I mean, the nice thing about that game, I think, is that it's, yeah, like Zelda, it's all real time, and yeah, I don't know, I just found it, it's just really colorful and like lush, and it's just exciting.
So it's kind of like a Link to the Past, in a
sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But way different sprites.
Yes, and I think that they, you know, not to ever compare anything more favorably to A Link to the Past, because I know that will instantly get me fired from this podcast. But I would say that probably the things going on in Secret of Mana are a little, you know, because like Link to the Past, you know, I think they kind of already had their established sort of like lore and sort of like the look of things, even though the times were still changing along with the graphics. But Secret of Mana, I think they, it's like they're a little more, dare I say, creative. Like things are a little more quirky. Let's say quirky.
So they have more creative license to just kind of go off the wall because they're not facing
there's
themselves
some
off.
Goofy stuff in that game, I think, but in a good way. So. Yes.
How long is the game?
I have no idea. I played it in like the Super NES era on my friend's Super Nintendo, so I couldn't even venture a guess at this point. Not short, I don't think.
Okay. That's another reason I haven't started playing, because I want to be able to play it when I actually sit down and, you know, focus on it. What's kind of nice, though, and this wasn't some sort of planned thing or anything, but a few years ago, I think it was one or two of them, Secret Santas ago, somebody, and I wish I could remember who exactly, I don't think it was you, but somebody photoshopped the Secret of Mana box art with like Santa Claus and a reindeer and Negative World and everything, and they did the whole thing up. So I've had that in the thread, but it's just a really funny picture to have in there, and so I copied it over from last year, and I wish I could play Secret Santa, the Super Nintendo game, you know, on the Negative World Entertainment System.
That'd be cool. Anyway, so what are you playing right now?
So I've been playing a lot of stuff. Here's what happened. So Secret Santa, there was discussion of whether or not we should let Steam be an option for gifting, because obviously that opens up the doors for other options and such. But this kind of discussion happened too late in the game for us to really kind of set up and confirm who had what. You know, even to state, like, I have a Mac, so my choices are much limited compared to someone who has a PC. So this all didn't happen, and I had a Steam account a long time ago because I downloaded Portal for free when they were offering it. So I only got Steam just to get Portal, and then I never even played Portal. So I knew I had it, so I kind of booted it back up, and I was looking at it, and I was realizing all these damn sales that were going on, and it kind of blew my mind. And then I realized when I bought the Humble Bundle, like 3 and 4 or 3 and 5 or whatever ones I bought, that those had Steam keys. So I kind of went crazy, and okay. I should open up my Steam right now and look, but I have a ton of games all of a sudden, and there's only a handful that I've been playing so far, but like one of them that I definitely had to get was The Walking Dead, but I haven't started that yet, because again, that's, I want to sit down and actually like work through that. But that said, one of the games I was playing a lot of was The Basement Collection.
And okay.
Have you heard of that at all?
Only through you.
Okay. Well, The Basement Collection, I don't know what kind of discussion this might end up being, if at all. Due to your lack of frame of reference. But The Basement Collection, I guess, is a collection of like 5 games or so from the creator of Super Meat Boy. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe one other person might have been collaborative, but I know it's mainly about him. And so there's like this one, I can't remember all the names of them because, again, I don't have it pulled up. But one of them I've played extensively on the computer a long time ago, and it, you kind of end up going into space. It's kind of a weird, quirky game. But the main game that I was playing a lot of was actually, I just remembered, Timefuck, or whatever, however the hell you pronounce that.
I'm sorry?
Timefuck, I guess. It's fuck, but but the two centered letters are switched, so I don't know how the hell you'd pronounce it. But that's it's a platforming game where you kind of jump between dimensions in the same screen. And, you know, if you're on a screen where the next screen is going to have a ledge that's where you are, then you know, obviously die. But in the same vein as VVVVVV, you just restart right away, that kind of thing. Or Meat Boy, I guess you could say, too. So I played that, which was just bizarre. Just freaking, like, psychologically changing, altering, bizarre.
So wait, when did this game originally come out?
That's a good question. I can check that live on the podcast, sort of.
Type.
Yeah, and it's not easy to find out. But frankly, I don't know. Now, let's see. It says, 2009.
Okay.
The whole premise is like, you're this pixely dude who walks up to a box and out yourself pops and says, hey, you have to get in here or we won't exist. He drags you in and then you just go through platforming challenges so that way you can save yourself. I don't know.
Okay.
It's really bizarre. I would recommend it. It's not that long of a game either. The challenges are not too difficult or anything, but it's just really weird. And the soundtrack's really lacking because all it is kind of like static noise and then weird talking. Mm-hmm. It seriously could mess you up in the head, I feel. But I played that for a while, but I played a lot of Meat Boy, the original Meat Boy, which I didn't know there was an original Meat Boy, but I love Super
what?
Meat Boy so much.
I didn't know there was either.
Yeah, but I guess the whole point of Super Meat Boy is to be like a souped-up version of the original game that he made for Flash.
Okay.
And it plays pretty much the same. So it was a lot of fun, a lot less levels, and a lot less to collect as far as bandages and stuff. But, man, if you like Super Meat Boy, it's worth going back to that, even though it's a little bit different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I dabbled in the Basement Collection, but the main thing that I really played, and thank God for a program called Darwin Remote.
Okay.
I don't know if you probably never heard of that. You're not a, because you don't have a Mac, right?
Nope.
No. So it's a program that allows my Mac to just read my Wiimote and the Bluetooth, you know, talk to Bluetooth and everything. So I can even like map the mouse to IR for whatever reason to kind of mimic that. I guess that would be for like, what, illegally downloading ROMs or something. But what I use it for is I sync up my remote to the computer, and then I can play just with a normal D-pad, or I can even plug the classic controller in and play.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I could play, you know, ROMs, I guess, with that, but the main thing that I used it for was Steam, and so I got to play Cave Story, or Cave Story Plus, I should say. And man, that was something that I was just working hard at. And
yeah.
Have you played
Cave
Story?
That's another toughie. Yes. Okay. When it first hit WiiWare is when I played it.
Yeah.
So it's been a little while, but yeah.
And that was, I first played it then to beat it the normal way. So this time I was like, you know what? Hey, I heard that one last dungeon's really hard. So I'll go do that.
Yep.
And that was hard.
It is freaking hard.
The prophecy was true.
Yeah.
And it makes it worse that they lock you into that save point. Like luckily they let you save right before it, but then they lock you and you can't even undo it.
Yep.
Which I was mad about, but I'm glad they did it because it made me think, you know what? I'm going to do it then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it. And have you ever attempted that?
Yes. I remember I spent like an entire afternoon and eventually did it. But it was a while there where I was just like, I can't do this. This is impossible. I don't know how anyone could do this.
So you did it just in an afternoon?
Yeah. Well, no, not the whole game.
Well, no, I mean just that section, though.
Yeah, the last from the last save.
I guess I don't know how much time I spent on it, but it was a few nights of just trying after trying and everything, and it was worth it, though. I felt really good about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I really liked it. I mean, it was annoying. I wish that they would have had save points, even if it forced me to save like the health I had
uh-huh.
for the rest of the game. But I wish they had save points between each like basement level, because it was just annoying knowing that I could get through that. But I had to do it again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the jetpack doesn't always, or the booster, it doesn't always work the way you want it to, you know. Neither do my thumbs.
Explain. How do you mean?
Well, like, I mean, if you hit up right, it'll just go right, you know, when you're trying to shoot up in that one first section.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was frustrating to die simple deaths or whatever. But, and actually, the first part was the hardest of the three basements, in my opinion. You know, shooting all the cherub enemies or whatever they're actually called wasn't too bad.
Well, you mean the ones where they're – well, let's see. Do you mean the part with the ceiling collapsing, like that bit?
Oh, no. That actually wasn't even too bad either.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I got hit like crazy, but you in the third basement section, because that was number two, you couldn't like get enough health to be back to full again if you were really careful.
Right.
So I didn't mind that so much. I usually just ran right through it.
And you mean just by like farming the baddies or whatever, right?
Yeah, farming baddies.
To get your health. Yeah.
I did learn about if you go back into the basement two, then the two hearts will regenerate at the start of basement three, which is kind of cheating, but whatever.
No, I think that sounds familiar. I totally must have done that.
I mean, I was able to get full health without doing that, but it was just it took more time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The heavy press is a really annoying boss because it takes, in my opinion, it takes forever unless you just spam them. Also, another problem I was having is I kept forgetting the damn missile upgrade that you get right at the end, and that makes a big difference.
Don't recall, but yeah.
Yep,
I remember needing, like, every upgrade that was possibly at my disposal, just, like, even throughout rest of the game up until then, right? Because if you don't prepare, if you don't do everything, then you are just going to be too underpowered,
right,
by the time you get there, right? So.
And I did find that that was the case. Like, I had an easier time with the bosses this time around than I did my very first time playing through. And that's because, you know, my first time playing, I chose the machine gun as opposed to getting, I don't think that allows you to get the spur in the end.
Right.
I don't even know. I know I got the lesser booster and that sort of thing. But yeah, all in all, and then I got to Balos and I fought him. He took quite a few tries, but I guess not that many overall, but he was tough. And so what happened, oh man, I was so psyched. This was just a few nights ago, honestly. Mm-hmm. I was, my girlfriend and I were talking, then she went to bed, and I read, I think it was the Daily Chat Thread or something, in Scranton, I believe is how his screen is pronounced. He posted a picture of his tattoo that he's been working on. And I said, hey, that reminds me of Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, which is a Flaming Lips song, and might be the name of the album too. And he's like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. So I decided to put the music on, because I already had the music turned off, because I was playing like the night before with the music off, because I was chatting with my girlfriend at the same time on the computer. And so I have that, and it's like pumping me up, you know? And then I get the Balos, and that's when I decide to turn the music off so I can focus. And I don't have any music, unfortunately, during the game, so it was a little less epic, but I got to that fourth final form, and I was like, and I paused, and I had to take a breather, and I was like, okay, this is happening. I'm like, this is gonna happen. I'm gonna do this. I was so psyching myself up. It's like midnight. I'm all alone. I'm just like, I'm gonna do this. And lo and behold, I mean, that's actually one of the easier forms of them too. There's like, I didn't have that much trouble with the bats. I don't know if you remember the bats, but man, it was so effing satisfying to beat him. And then, because I had the music off, the freaking credits rolled without music. So
it was
really deflating of a moment. But I rewatched the credits on YouTube to get the effect after that. Mm-hmm. But so I was playing a lot of that. That was fun. That was a fun experience.
Cool. Yeah, very good. You know, I think that's definitely a game everyone should play if they haven't, or if they've been waiting, deciding. It's just, I don't know. It's like old school, obviously, but it's also very different. It doesn't feel just like a game made trying to be like old games necessarily. It's sort of like, it's got that look and it's sort of got that vibe, but I think the gameplay is actually something.
It feels very
unique. Yeah.
It feels very new to me. It has that old art style, you're right, but I have a personal love of the game because it was a no-brainer when I was like, you know, I should just play it again. Why not? Mm-hmm. Like, everything else got pushed to the wayside, and I was just playing Cave Story, and it's so gratifying to play that game too. Like, do you find that when you play that, you just feel really good about the time you're spending?
Yeah.
Like, it's fun in a very pure form. It's pure cut, you know?
Yeah. And despite its difficulty, I mean, as I think we both said, it's like, okay, like the game is not necessarily easy throughout, but at the end, it's, you know, that last little cave is super difficult. But very few times did I feel like, you know, temptations to throw the controller kind of frustration, you know, like it didn't feel like this game is cheap. It felt like I am not quite good enough, but I'll get there, you know?
I agree. And that's the right kind of difficulty, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Game cheats.
that's bad challenge, if you want to say stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like difficulty just like the rest of them, but I shouldn't have to, it's not fun for me if it's too hard. Mm-hmm. And some people, maybe it is really fun if it's ridiculously hard like that, but that's just not how I like to play. So, I don't like it when a game is too hard to figure out a puzzle or if it's too hard to, you know, to fight the enemies or whatever.
Yeah. And I just felt like that game had a fairly interesting amount of freedom in that, you know, there were so many things you could miss or do one way versus another and it would drastically change the outcome of the game.
Well, like, the whole curly side story is.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's not spelled out for you at all.
No.
I mean, I admit I wouldn't have gotten to that area without really kind of reading a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, getting certain weapons and not getting certain weapons. And for instance, that one jump when you try to jump over that gap, and then if you miss, then you fall down and you talk to the professor, and that's when you get the booster.
Oh, yeah.
You talk to him at all, you're forced to get the booster, but the only way to talk, you have to talk to him to get out of that hole. So if you fall at all, you have to get the booster. Unless you restart at that save point or whatever. And so you have to skip that by making the jump perfectly.
Yep.
And you don't even think you can, really. So that you can bypass it and play the next like two sections of the game without a booster for him to then give you, hey, this is a better booster. And then that's an important part. Like, just that alone, I remember the first time I played, I definitely fell down there, and I definitely didn't think anything of it. I thought it was probably supposed to happen.
Yep.
So the game can be frustrating in that sense if you're trying to go for like a perfect run on your own. And I guess there's a fourth ending, too, I was reading up about. There's a hidden ending, and it's, I guess it's totally legit, but I don't know what versions it's in or isn't, but...
I don't know.
But, yeah, so anyway, Cave Story is great. Yeah, I do recommend everybody go play it. I mean, it's just fun shoot-em-up platformer, and the graphics look really nice, the music is excellent, and that actually kind of leads me into the other game I was playing a lot of, and it's called Thomas Was Alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know
I looked into this a little bit at your recommendation, but why don't you set the stage? Because I don't know, is this like a real famous game? Like, I hadn't heard about it till you.
I heard someone mention it in the Steam thread, and then I looked into it. I saw it beforehand, and I was like, what do I want this for? It's some blocks, but
it is some blocks, that's for sure.
But you know what? Simplicity can be deceiving. For instance, VVVVVV, which looked like ass to me for a minute. I was like, what do I want to play this game for? You know, it looks so whatever. And then I shut the hell up and I played it and I fell in love with it. It's one of my favorite games ever. Same thing happened here. Thomas Was Alone. Now, it's not necessarily one of my favorite games ever, but it's not even that challenging, but it's one of the most fulfilling experiences I've had in a long, long time. And that's like really awesome for me to discover that. And the premise, I should say, is you are this block and you are a square. I don't know if you start off as Thomas, but there's different shapes, different parallelograms that have names and different functions, like the short kind of fat cube. He can jump, but he can't jump very high. There's a taller one, which I believe is Thomas, and he can jump higher. There's a flat one that kind of acts like a trampoline. There's a big blue one that can float in water, and while all the other ones would drown in water. And so it's pretty much like playing, you know, a platformer game where you have these characters that have different abilities, but they're all cubes of some kind or rectangles. And you switch through these constantly. Each level has a certain amount of them that are on the screen, and you have to get them to their goals. That's all, just a white rectangle outline of their body.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to navigate these things through a puzzle solving. And the whole time, like, the music is very ambient in the same way that VVVVV is, or V6, I should just start saying. it's in the same way that is, and even somewhat in the way that Cave Story's music kind of makes me feel. But it's ambient and more of a somber tone, and there's a narrator. And this is actually how it was recommended to me, and not me directly, but recommended in that thread, was like the narration is just really good. And there's this whole story about these stupid-ass shapes that have like emotions and feelings. And the whole premise is like these characters kind of started getting their own consciousness and realized that they were in these puzzles and that they wanted to break out and they wanted to make it so that way all rectangles and squares could be free and to do whatever they wanted. And then there's like jealousy that rides between them. One of them gets a crush on the other one, but it sounds so ridiculously stupid. I know, but it's honestly a little magical. And I don't think that's an understatement. It's so interesting to listen to the narrator as you're playing. And as you get to a certain section in the particular puzzle, like a new voice, bubble will show up and the text will be on the screen too, if you want to read it. And it's like, you're sitting there making these jumps and the narrator says something like, not about Thomas, but I forget the names of everyone, but he's like, you know, Thomas thought that, you know, he was, I can't even fake it, but, you know, like Thomas thought that he was not impressing Laura, and so he felt sad and wanted to just escape all by himself. And then later in the level, it's like, but then he realized that he was going to help Laura get out of here, and thus, he was actually going to be her hero, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, and it really hits you emotionally to connect to these stupid shapes. And at the same time, the music is really great, and it's really fun to play. The platforming is a little off, because sometimes, like, you're sliding, and then you want to jump, and it doesn't jump. But that could be an issue with my Darwin remote connection.
Okay.
But the platforming, for the most part, is really solid. I am not really too frustrated with it. And it's just really great. And I'm through like world 8 now, and I think there's 9 in the main game, and each has like maybe 10 levels, maybe 8 levels or something like that. So there's a lot of levels to play.
Okay.
And I'm just really excited. I just hope like at some point they all just burst the hell out and they go like on a rampage through Manhattan. Like, I want them to be in the free world, you know? they're like trapped somehow or somewhere. And there's like a pixel cloud that kind of looms around from time to time and takes Thomas's friends away and brings them, you know, and they end up back and he's got to rescue them in their other places. And it's really cool.
Do you kind of know what it is that they're trying to escape from, or is
not
that just
at all.
Like unspoken? Okay.
Unspoken at all. In between each world, there's a little bit of a blurb about a scientist that says, like, you know, we should have known after this point that the AI would gain greater understanding of itself. We should have just let it happen instead of trying to stop it. So it kind of talks about, like, this almost apocalyptic, not like in a mass murder kind of way, but just like a turn of the century, like going into a new era of Earth time, because like something happened, some event where AI became more aware of itself or something like that. And it's just, it's just epic feeling, the music and everything and all the narration and the whole thing. Maybe it just hits my fancy in a particular way, but very cool.
It certainly looks interesting. Any clue as to the meaning of the title of the game?
I think if I remember correctly, there's a narration in the beginning of Thomas feeling like he was by himself, that he had no friends really, and he was kind of the only person in this little puzzle. Then he realizes that there are other people in this, or squares, rectangles in this puzzle, and he's not alone, and he can rely on other people. I keep saying people because I think it's a metaphor for just humanity and society and social groups and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Which
the webpage calls it a game about friendship and jumping.
And that's really what it is. And so it kind of shows you, like, we may feel alone sometimes, but yet we're honestly not. And we all work together, whether we realize it or not, to create things and to do things. And I mean, this is just part of my own personal philosophy that I, you know, think about sometimes, is that, I mean, even just going into a GameStop to buy a game, you're affecting the lives of everyone around you in some degree. In fact, you're affecting the lives of other people in the future. You might buy a game off the shelf that somebody else wanted at that point, and they do not get that because you purchased it, and that changes their lives into a whole new path, into a new direction. And it's kind of crazy how just everything affects everything, sort of, you know? The butterfly effect, you could say. And so the game focuses on that.
Impressive alone that the game even makes you think in this capacity.
And all the while you're just jumping around, you know?
A bunch of little rectangles have spurred this kind of thought. So I think that seems to be the creator's goal to some extent.
Yeah. And one last thing I'll say, because I don't want to spoil, like, I know it's funny I'm saying I don't want to spoil this game, but
spoiler is circle.
Yes, there's a circle in the game. Spoiler alert. No. As far as I know, there are no unlockable characters such as Circle or Diamond or Squiggly. But
Reverse Squiggly.
But there is like a dynamic shift later in the game where the perspective of the game kind of takes a little bit different tone. The game plays the same and everything, but from the story perspective, it switches up in a way that you're kind of like, oh. And it really makes you apply everything you just learned by playing the game and everything you've been thinking into a whole new way, which is just really gratifying.
Okay.
It's like a nice psychological jaunt, and it's just really good. So I definitely highly recommend that game. And I've been like running my mouth, so let me just say one more thing. Ticket to Ride, I've been playing a ton of. That and Settlers of Catan, or Catan, or whatever. But board games in general, like, I've been hearing about Ticket to Ride, which is a game where you connect cities with your trains, and you have only a certain amount of trains to use, and you have to pull cards to try to essentially get resources to build these tracks, and once you build a track, no one else can. But it's so, so fun, the games are pretty easy to kind of get into. The strategy, though, is there, and especially when you're playing with multiple people, it gets tense because you want to claim certain routes and everything, and the whole point is to score more points than in your opponents. And so I got the actual game for Christmas, and then I bought, like, some expansions, like, in the boxes so I can play them with friends, but then I realized that on Steam at the time, for $8, you could get the digital version plus all downloadable content. So I freaking bought my girlfriend it, and I bought my sister it, so I had some people to play with, you know. Of course, my sister's computer for some reason won't work, even though it should, and my girlfriend's computer just won't. So maybe down the line I'll actually be able to play this with those people. But it's a really fun game, and they have it on Steam, and I would really recommend it. It's for Mac and PC. If you like board games, it's definitely a really cool thing, and I know I'm not talking much on it, but I want to move on, so.
Sure.
So, yeah, so, like I said, been playing a lot of stuff. There's lots of I didn't even touch upon, but I've talked way too much. So, Joe, what have you been playing, sir?
Well, I've also been playing a bunch of things, but I'll sort of stick to the highlights. new games since Christmas. I got an eShop card from my brother-in-law, so I could download some stuff on the 3DS eShop. And so far, I've only made one purchase, and that was a game I had my eye on for a little while called Liberation Maiden. And it's from the crazy mind of Suda51, although this game is not all that crazy. It's not, there's no real shock value like there is in some of his other games. And as most people know, it was part of the Guild of One retail release in Japan, and this is just one of, I think it was four or five games that came on that cartridge in Japan. So it's not a very big game. It's only four levels and then a boss, and you can beat it in probably under 2 hours. But
how much did it cost?
I think it was $8. I want to say $7.99, I think. But it is an extremely good game. Man, I was just so pleased with, I mean, the word that keeps coming to mind is production value. I mean, obviously it's a very small game. I don't know if they were able to save money some way by like having, you know, four or five small games put into one effort. I don't know if that makes it cheaper to produce or what, but I mean, it opens and ends with anime cutscenes that are like very well done. I guess maybe that's kind of a, you know, there's kind of a standard for anime cutscenes that maybe we've all gone beyond. So maybe I shouldn't be that impressed, but it looks great. The animation looks great. And those designs are used throughout the game when characters speak to each other. There's only really two characters. It's the woman Shoko who pilots the mech, and then the guy Kira who she, it's like her coordinator or something, but they have excellent voice acting between the two of them. And you know, there's sort of like little moments of chatter throughout while you're blowing stuff up and whatever, but it's just all really so well done. And like the dialogue, even though there's nothing necessarily, you know, there's no like big twists or anything in the plot, but just the dialogue between the two of them, it's just really well written. Like it could very easily have wandered off into like the ridiculous kind of anime stereotypes of, you know, I don't know, whatever sort of like weird catchphrases that they might want to start shouting. But it just is all very believable, I think is what it comes down to. It feels like this is a real world that hangs together very nicely. So as far as the actual gameplay, it's a bit hard to describe. I have not played any of the Zone of the Enders games, even though I own most of them. But people tell me that this sort of feels reminiscent of that style of game. You can instantly recognize the similarities in so far as you are piloting this giant mech and you're flying around. It's all in the air. There's no land combat. And you're just kind of blowing stuff up. And the one gripe I might have is that it uses the Metroid Prime Hunters / Kid Icarus Uprising style of you control the mech with the circle pad and you aim with the stylus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I've gone on record as saying I'm not a huge fan of this control scheme. I find it very uncomfortable. I'm not sure how much a second circle pad would really improve the experience, because you do need to kind of be moving around the screen very quickly. But I do think that, say, like if this were a WiiWare release, that would have been probably ideal. I would love to see a sequel on that platform someday. That would really be very cool.
And but, so do you shoot with like the L trigger then?
No, what's kind of nice is you shoot you only have two primary guns, one of which you can sort of lock on to many targets at once. And when you release the stylus, it fires them all.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of like swoop around, locking on to however many targets you can, and then you let go and it shoots all the your little missiles at once. The other one is like a pinpoint laser, does not lock on at all. But it's, you know, very powerful, very focused, and you just hold the stylus on the screen and it shoots wherever you're aiming.
Okay. So it's a touch-based thing.
Yep. And what's kind of interesting about that mechanic in and of itself is that your weapon is kind of made of your shield. So like the energy that you use to shoot is energy that would otherwise be your shield. So there's this risk reward constantly of, well, I could hang on just a little bit longer and try to lock on to one more enemy, but I'm leaving myself open to attack this whole time. Or I could, you know, hold the focus laser on this one enemy for a long time and try to drain its energy all the way down to zero. But again, the longer I do that, the more open to attack I am.
Sure.
And that energy will, you could essentially have an infinite amount. If you chain together combos of destroying enemies, you get more shield. But you still have like a core of health that will not regenerate. So if you lose all your shield and then you get hit a couple times, your core health starts going down.
Right.
And so that will not come back.
It chips away at like your core energy.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of, I mean, the pacing of the gameplay is fairly medium tempo. It's like you can go from these moments of, okay, all of a sudden, like there's five missiles homing in on you and you have to shoot them all down out of the air, versus there's times when you're just kind of like patrolling, looking for stragglers and sort of picking them off one at a time. So, it's really a good balance as far as the pacing. I will say, even though there's only those four levels, I have been really impressed by, you get replay value by like doing these achievements, so to speak. So it'll be like, you know, destroy 50 submarines or something. And you can't do that all in one playthrough, really. So you got to play the game a couple times. There's a bunch of different ones, like, you know, beat this level with 100%, you know, destroying 100% of the enemies or not taking any damage or this and that.
Okay. Do you get anything for these achievements? Does it unlock anything else, or is it just...
Yes, when you unlock an achievement, and this is something that really only probably means a lot to story nerds like me, but it just basically gives you like another little chapter of backstory. So when you're looking at the achievement screen, you can click on any one of the ones you've unlocked, and you'll just get like a, you know, couple paragraphs of backstory. Personally, I am still waiting for one such achievement, and then I'm just going to go through and read them all. So I've kind of only skimmed some of them. I'm kind of like holding.
I probably want to do that myself, because I can see like if you're just getting achievements left and right kind of randomly, then it can feel disconnected, and so it may not be as interesting as if you were to read it all together. Or...
Exactly. And I think the last two achievements are the opening and ending cutscene, being able to view those anytime you want. So, mm-hmm. And the other really surprising thing is, so in replaying these levels, like, I think it's purely random, but I get like a different, submission, like every time. So like you'll be playing the game, and I should have mentioned the general premise of the four main levels is, that there are these little, well, not little, they're spikes in the ground, and they're like the size of a building. And these spikes are like draining the land's energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to go hunt them down and destroy them, and you restore, you know, greenery to the land, and everything's very happy. But in between these, like, you'll suddenly just get like an incoming message from your coordinator guy, and he'll inform you of some submission that's totally optional. But in playing through the levels, I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's always a different submission, and they're not, you know, they're not very intricate. They don't necessarily go for, this isn't the kind of game that's trying to like wow you all the time. Again, it's really, I think, trying to paint this picture of this universe as like a very believable one. So some of the submissions might be as, boring, so to speak, as like just patrolling a certain chasm or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to fly through and check it all out, and maybe something will pop up and try to kill you. Maybe nothing will happen. Maybe, you know, it'll just say all's clear. The only truly random thing I've encountered in the game, random as in weird, is one of the submissions. I had to like hunt down this one location. I went there, I shot at the ground that I was able to lock onto, and what looked like a piece of strawberry shortcake popped up. So I have no idea what that's about. I can only imagine that is the one sign of Suda51's insanity leaking out a little bit.
I can only imagine him like binging on strawberry shortcake and like laughing to himself and like, oh, this should be in here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or like maybe he dripped a little bit from his mouth and it landed on his 3DS as he was playtesting. It's like, oh, this should pop up here.
Exactly. Exactly. You understand.
Yeah.
So I think the only other thing worth mentioning is the general premise is fairly interesting. You know, it's called Liberation Maiden. So you're trying to liberate New Japan from this, you know, shadowy organization that's ruining the world. But you do so as this girl, and she is technically president. So, like, the intro cutscene is her being successfully elected by the people. So in this strange future, the presidents, like, do all the fighting. So, I don't know. It's quirky, and it's pretty darn cool. And I like that she rides the mech like a motorcycle. She's not, like, in the mech. It's just,
I did, I did notice, that's how I kind of realized that she was a she, because there's a, you know, anime ass shot in the trailer. Do they kind of, you know, sex her up a little bit, or do they not really run with that? Is it more like she's Zero Suit Samus, or is she Zero Suit Samus and we have to have a bunch of gratuitous angles and stuff?
No, there's just that one shot during the intro.
Which is what I saw.
Yes, and I want to say maybe one more during the ending cutscene. But I'm not totally sure. I might just be thinking of the first one again. But that's it. No, she doesn't do any, like, weird suggestive poses. And there's no real, like, double entendres in the dialogue or anything like that. So, and she's definitely very, like, capable. And, you know, she's not like a ditz or anything. Mm-hmm. So, no, she's cool. She's a cool character. I would love to see a sequel. And I won't spoil anything. But there is room for one. So.
Interesting.
That'd be neat. Even if it was this short and at the same price, I mean, I would gladly do it. So, anyway.
Well, that might be the best way to do it, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, you know, with games like this where they clearly just sort of were putting together like a sample pack, I wonder if any of them had the idea of, well, we'll just see which ones people like and then maybe we'll go from there, or if it was just truly like, we just want to make these small one-off projects just because.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. But. So, that's that. The only other game I've been substantially playing is New Super Mario Bros. 2. A little-known title. Very, very niche. No. What can be said about this game that has not already been said?
Nothing.
Nothing, probably.
Nothing at all. Moving on. No, just kidding. Well, how was you know, I know you haven't played New Super Mario Bros. U, so, I mean, that's a common comparison right now in the gaming space because they're so similar and whatever, and the release dates are pretty close, but how are you enjoying this compared to, say, the first one? There's a definite spin on the whole gold coin thing and a focus on that, so I'd like to hear what you think about that.
Sure. Well, as far as the gold coin thing, like, I gotta say, on the one hand, I really appreciated it because just having that little ticker counting up all the coins you get, for some reason, has made me want to collect coins. And I guess maybe that's also part of the level design because there are a lot more areas where it's like, you know, like almost like a breadcrumb trail of coins, you know, just begging for you to collect them. But I kind of like that it sort of has given me like a purpose to care about coins again because increasingly throughout the Mario series, they become like less and less important because really all they do is get you extra lives. Well, as time has gone on, the idea of extra lives has become less and less important because, you know, modern gamers would get too frustrated with like a game over. So, you know, lives have become basically infinite. So collecting coins becomes kind of meaningless.
Right.
So I like adding this sort of incentive, even if it's a basically hollow incentive. You know, you're just basically getting this number to go up higher. But I did enjoy it. I mean, I fell for it. I didn't think that I would care about the coins, but it does. I don't know. It's compelling somehow, very subtly compelling.
Do you think that you'll play until you have a million?
I think that I will, but not nearly in like one burst. Like normally, I just play a game until I have 100%ed it or completed it, and whatever my definition of that is. But like I've played through the game all the way. I've gotten the 5 stars next to my save file, or whatever. I've done like everything else there is to do except get a million coins, and I'm only at like 70,000 coins.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of getting a million, to think that I'm only 7% of the way there is ridiculous. So if I do eventually get there, which I would like to do, I'm totally fine with it being over the course of many years. I think that if you pay for like the DLC Coin Rush, I think some of those make it a lot easier to get more coins, but I'm not gonna. I don't like paid DLC. So I'm.
Well, there is a free pack.
Right.
At least it was originally.
I got that when I played it a couple times. I do think I got a good amount of coins from it, but I was gonna say, as far as the actual Coin Rush mode, that has not hooked me. So
yeah, it didn't hook me either, really.
Yeah. So even though I like the idea of collecting coins, the idea of just playing like three arbitrary levels in like a purely score attack kind of mindset doesn't really do it for me. I think this is another thing where, you know, if I was living in Japan and I was going to be constantly street passing people with 3DSs, or if I was still in some sort of school setting where I could, you know, have all my buddies that I was comparing scores with, that would make it worthwhile. But since I don't have any of that, I just don't really care.
Right.
Now, I don't know. I'm wondering if you might. When you street pass with other people, do you like get their coin total added to yours or something?
No, right? No. It's just like it just kind of makes you run through a gauntlet that they have saved, and then you can try to compete with them, I think.
Okay. Because I was thinking, if that were the case, then maybe getting to 1 million might not be so bad, you know, if I just occasionally run into people. But, man, 1 million coins, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I think that some people did it, like, even within their first, like, week or two.
Oh, I know. And I've seen people on some message boards being like, let me know when you get to 9,900,009. Like, okay. So, yeah, I mean, as far as the everything else in the game, what can I say? I mean, I went into it expecting Mario platforming. I got that. I think it's still the best, you know, pure platforming fun you can get. So I was in no way disappointed. In fact, you know, most of the levels I found myself being able to point to at least one thing and saying like, you know, that's kind of a clever bit of level design that I don't think I've seen before. I was talking to someone about this. I'm not sure who. Who said, like, yeah, that's cool, but it makes it feel like a fan game, because like some of the more clever things are like, you know, they would take, you know, these pre-existing assets and just kind of play with them in like this never seen before way. And they felt that was the approach that like a fan would normally take, where they don't have the resources to create their own new.
That seems almost like purely an aesthetic issue, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you saw the same exact thing you're talking about, but then with a new skin, you would call it new.
Sure.
At least that person who you're talking about would probably call it new.
Sure.
And in fact, we've probably all done it in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So just because it has very similar graphics to its predecessor, I think maybe that makes people feel like, well, kind of in the same way that Super Mario Galaxy 2 could be called that. And I know some people who had, but I disagree with that idea.
I do as well. I mean, you can't expect them to reinvent the wheel every time. And Game Dad Grant just made a post on the forum today that I really agreed with, which is something I think is lost on a lot of folks, is that, you know, back in the day, we got kind of spoiled by every new game having this completely different look, because back in the day, you know, you would go from, well, one game to the next, people were like really just discovering what they could do with this technology. But now it's such a science that like the leaps are so small.
Sure.
That, you know, it's not going to be like this crazy breath of fresh air from like, one game to the next.
Like, there's a less of a drive to change. Like, why change it? Let's focus on the gameplay. Let's focus on how to use what we have. If we don't need to make it more impressive. And you know, and that's a good point that you and Game Dad Grant make, because back in the day, Nintendo was constantly competing with people even on their own console, on the NES, you know, because Konami was doing really good with their stuff. And
sure.
A bunch of companies were doing really good stuff on the NES. And then when the Super Nintendo came along, you had a lot of strong competitors. And now that Nintendo's moved out of that space, like, yes, it has competitors, but it doesn't give a shit about them anymore.
Yeah.
So they're not trying to compete to have the new nice-looking platforming graphics. You know, they have what they want to do, and then they don't want to focus on this. And they don't care what anyone says. This is how much time they want to spend on this. It's maybe more efficient to just keep the graphics from the last game, and they're happy with them, maybe refine them a little bit, but let's focus on everything else. They don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, I think the other what would be competing companies have sort of said, that's fine, you can have that space. We don't want it. You know, like, you do that thing, and we'll do our thing, and that's fine. So yeah. And plus, you know, also as Game Dad Grant said, it's like, you know, before they were struggling to make this little blob look like Mario, but now it looks pretty much exactly like Mario. So there's not, you know, I mean, obviously on the 3DS, it's not going to look as crisp as on the Wii U. I mean, but on the Wii U, it pretty much looks, you know, exactly like what the marketing material would look like. So, you know, how much further can they really go as far as that? So then you get into like, well, should they just change up the coat of paint and make it like a Wind Waker approach where you just do something very artistic and just very radical, you know, a radical change almost as just like a show of good faith? Because I think that's maybe what people are looking for, or we're hoping for, is just like, just do something different just so that you know that I'm not just going to buy the exact same thing over and over again.
Well, and there's a few things to be said about that. I mean, a new coat of paint can inspire new gameplay for one, but also it can, it still gives you a different experience. You know, we've all played how many Mario games by now, but having different coats of paint makes them feel a little bit different. They are different experiences. We prefer some over the others because of their aesthetic. And, it's as if you were to shoot every movie in the same, like, filters and the same style. You know, we've seen many movies of the same kind of premise, you know, there's the same genre, but having the different director behind it, the different kind of look, can really make one more gratifying than the other.
Sure.
And you're right. If they do this, then I guess like what you're saying, it would be kind of, I guess I wanted to kind of focus on that good faith segment you're talking about, because none of us would be content still if we were playing the same Mario from 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And just from an aesthetic point of view. And we want to be excited by these games, so to see something different that we haven't seen before, that's like one of the definitions of excitement, you know, is to feel refreshed and such. And it actually can help them, because they don't have to necessarily have as much creative license to change things up, because you may not notice that they're doing the exact same part of this level that they kind of did once before, but it looks different now.
Right.
So maybe they can let that slide and then they can focus on something else, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's healthy for them to challenge themselves. But again, not just because the gameplay should change, but I mean, they are artists. And so an artist typically doesn't want to draw the same thing over and over and over and over, unless you're old Greg. I don't know if anyone references that, but
nope.
It's from the Mighty Boosh. He draws a lot of Bailey's bottles.
All right.
You guys should watch that. But anyway, it's good for everybody. It's good for the goose, good for the gander, if on occasion it changes up. And I'm cool with there being a couple games together, kind of clumped together, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it right away.
Yeah. Know? Well, I think, and I don't know, I think we might have touched on this once before, but this is why I think that, like, people should probably put that hope or expectation on hold when it comes to the new Super Mario Brothers line, as much as it might seem incongruous with the title of the series, because I think that that's really, I think Nintendo really wants to have that as like the, how can I put it? Like the untainted, like the most pure essence of Mario. Do you know what I mean? Like, like purposefully not taking big risks and making sweeping radical changes, so that the folks out there who just love 2D Mario and just want that fix every year and a half or 2 years, whatever, know that they can get it. And I think that in games like the Galaxy series and even, you know, 3D Land, I think that's where they're going to play around a little bit more. I still don't think we're ever going to see, like, all of a sudden, oh, in this game, it's, you know, Mario has a machine gun and there's cover mechanics and online versus play. You know, I mean, it's going to be a while before they ever make anything that drastic of a change. But I just see the new Super Mario Brothers franchise as like their very, you know, safe and protected sort of realm, if you know what I mean.
And I guess what frustrates people is that, you know, Galaxy, like, at least for me, I kind of see a game like Galaxy as separate from the new Super Mario Brothers line, because you got 3D, you got 2D.
Mm-hmm.
3D's got its own line, its own requirements, its own gameplay mechanics that the 2D doesn't even have. Now, while they do have, you know, Super Mario 64 was a little bit different than Sunshine, which was a little bit different than Galaxy, partially in thematic quality and everything, but with the new Super Mario Brothers line, it is all the same. And you're, like you're saying, it's classic, but where is the shakeup in the 2D realm? So people who want 2D Mario because they prefer it over 3D don't really get the shakeup so much. And Super Mario 3D Land kind of counts for that, because it is a 2D game in some aspects.
Sure.
But it still is a 3D game. And maybe that's not maybe that's too far in the 3D realm for them. So I can see where frustration comes, where people might want something different in a purely 2D sense. But
well, now in your mind, having played New Super Mario Bros. U, is this whole, you know, boost mode thing, I mean, is that like a step in the right direction or not nearly enough?
It's not enough to support a whole game.
Okay. Because I think that's probably what Nintendo feels is like the big
change up,
the big difference, right?
Yeah. Now it's cool. Like again, my girlfriend and I, we had a lot of fun playing that together. Mm-hmm. More so the challenges, and it's, I didn't exactly denote this in my review I posted recently, but there's like, I prefer the main game by myself over the challenges. But when it came to partnering up with my girlfriend, I preferred playing the challenges with her over the main game.
Okay.
And,
interesting.
So the boost mode and such doesn't really affect it in a positive light like I would have hoped, perhaps. And I guess because, like, it's very obvious you're working together in the challenges. Like, the very first one that I can remember us playing was where, like, we had to get one of us, and we changed roles, so I don't remember who did it to succeed, but someone was Mario, and you had no floor. You had to avoid, like, bullet bill type characters, or I think there's some piranha plants, just all sorts of enemies in the sky, and you had to get to the flagpole without touching the ground, and obviously just using the boost, or the boost mode blocks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. Frustrating sometimes, but a lot of fun. Now, in the main game, the person playing boost mode kind of is delegated to the hole filler. Oh, they might fall down the hole. Click. Oh, I'll tap that guy just so that way the dry bones is already knocked down before they get to it. So it's cool at first, and it's like good for when I'm playing with my nephew because he doesn't really get the intricacies of Mario yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he can definitely jump like the best of them, but he can't like strategize his moves mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's fun to kind of help him out like that. But I mean, the main player still isn't playing. Like when they jump, they're not jumping to your little platform you're going to create because they don't even know it's there. They don't know where you're going to put it. There's no way to know. So they're going to play the game like normal and you're going to try to cover their ass. But that's okay. It because there's no way to collaborate really. I mean, you can like, you know, doot, 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 and then, oh, look, there's a staircase now. So use it. Sure. But that kind of slows the flow down of a Mario game, you know, to wait for the staircase to be formed. And then, maybe I'm not playing with the right people, but.
Well, I'm just, if I can just interject this one thing,
please
like,
do.
You know, playing a 2D Mario Brothers right now, I know that there are several times where like, there'll be either a power up or like a little ledge where it looks like there might be a bunch of coins or a star coin and you can get there, but you need like a running start, basically like a clear runway. And then you need to jump at like just the right time to get just the right height and whatever. So could there not be advantages where, you know, there'd just be playing something out of reach and you just, you know, make it easier for them to get up there, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, that doesn't seem that gratifying to me, though, personally.
Sure.
Like,
okay.
You know, so if I'm running through a Mario game that normally in one-player mode I can't even reach that without maybe, like, the spinning, you know, the
yep.
propeller hat or whatever, propeller suit,
mm-hmm.
I guess I would just feel, like, kind of cheated.
I get you.
You know? Like, okay, so now you're going to force me to find someone just so I can get the power-up sometime? And then I would just probably disregard it as an irrelevant power-up. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if it was a star coin, I'd be really frustrated at that, you know? I should be able to get a full Mario campaign in one player.
Yeah.
So it's
right.
hard because everyone expects a one-player mode out of that, but Nintendo's trying to make it more collaborative. And
sure.
I don't think it ever will feel completely satisfying. Partially because no one... I mean, well, I guess some people do, but it's not everyone who has a completely co-op lifestyle or
of course.
Household
yeah.
or, you know, so... It, I feel like it always will be delegated to a secondary mode. But then again, you know, devil's advocate, a lot of people like the challenge mode, the boost mode as well, but just the challenges in general in Mario better than the main game.
Okay.
And, like, I know, I'm pretty sure Zero is one of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know, we've kind of digressed into New Super Mario Bros. U, but...
Well, they're the same game, right?
that's what some people say.
No, I mean, I know I've said it before on this podcast, but I am excited to... try boost mode. I think it looks like a lot of fun.
Again, I think boost mode's great with somebody.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like it's not fun in the main game. I definitely think you should try it, but I think you'll get more general satisfaction out of playing the main game by yourself, but challenges with other people.
Sure.
Or even the challenge mode by swapping, like, okay, I'm going to try to get 10 one-ups here. Oh, I didn't do it. You try now. You know, that's kind of cool.
Okay.
But the main game is still kind of sacred to me.
Absolutely.
We've been playing a lot of good stuff, obviously. I guess we'll move forward with the podcast. And after the quick break, we'll jump into some discussion about the new Pokemon announcement that happened this morning. It was pretty big, and I am sure we'll both have something to say about it. Moving on to the big announcement, today we had a Nintendo Direct this morning, like 6 a.m. Eastern Time, and it was about Pokemon. And I suspect that there's two dudes here on this podcast right now that love Pokemon, one particularly more than the other, I think, which, of course, the credit would go to you, Joe.
Oh, cool.
I mean, I love Pokemon, but I feel like this day and age, you probably love them even more than I do. So
it's just my current obsession. I'll go on to some other kick eventually.
But a lot of people liked your whole comment about the Pokemon cycle, kind of mimicking the Sonic cycle a little bit. And like,
I mean, time to get wrapped up in it again.
You know, but it's true though. I mean, I didn't really elaborate on this last podcast, but I've had that kind of cycle happen to me pretty much since Pokemon Blue. You know, you just get wrapped up in the game, kind of dies off, you kind of give two shits. You know, you didn't catch them all, you're like, oh, who gives a crap? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, the new one comes out, it's like, you know, maybe I can catch them all this time. And then you kind of get really amped and you start, like, looking at the starters, and then you start kind of going to Serebii.net and looking at, like, screenshots that it released in Japan, and you just kind of start getting hyped all over again. And frankly, after seeing the starters in particular, I'm there.
I know.
Welcome back. And I haven't finished Pokemon Black 2. Mm-hmm. I have to do that. I have till October 2013. So,
yep.
To, this year, whatever.
Get
so,
cracking.
Yeah. So, I'm curious to see if there will be, or how there will be, a connection between the two. But we'll get into that shortly. So that is the main announcement, more or less. And now you've seen the trailer,
mm-hmm.
and I'm currently rewatching it, but it seems to that they're definitely trying to, you know, make it feel different. And it's going to be on the 3DS, the first one officially on 3DS, so
mm-hmm.
there should be constant 3D. And how does that excite you, first of all?
That it's on the 3DS or the 3D?
Well, both.
Both. I get, you know, the 3D on its own, the effect, probably not going to make too much of a difference. I usually feel the 3D effect is best in, like, more fast-paced, intense kind of games, or more atmospheric games. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll, you know, be cool, given that the world is more 3D. But the fact that it's on 3DS, what excites me about that is hopefully because the 3DS seems to be a more online-centric, more connected device than the DS ever was. Hopefully they'll finally, you know, have just more free ways to connect with your friends over Wi-Fi as opposed to just local multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
That's my big hope for that, for the new system. What about yourself?
I mean, frankly, that is a huge thing. I mean, for even the past couple games, that's been a big deal. Just like being able to trade on the world kind of mm-hmm. trading area. And battling your friends has been relatively simple.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully with like the 3DS friends list and everything, it'll be even simpler to just jump right in and play against your friends or trade against your friends.
OMG.
So I'm excited for that for sure. The 3D effect is always pleasant. You know, I'm looking at this trailer and there's like some fire effects kind of near the end of the trailer that will probably look pretty impressive. The game itself looks, someone else said this, and I kind of like what they said. It kind of looks like the quote-unquote 3D sections of Pokemon Black and White, where mm-hmm. they have just these weird perspectives, and they're kind of trying to be more 3D.
Sure.
I'm not sure how good those really look in the end, but I don't know. I guess stepping stones. I guess I'd rather them focus on getting this game to 3DS and really fleshing it out in other ways than like making it look some beautiful Xenoblade type game, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be kind of a cel-shaded look to it, at least to the character and then also the Pokemon themselves.
Yeah, yeah, that's what people were saying.
And I do appreciate the fact that the battles now are, like, much more interactive looking. Mm-hmm. They look kind of like they're from Pokemon Stadium or something.
Right, right.
The downside of that is I'm afraid that the speed in which battles happen could slow down again. Because they've really pushed towards making that faster to make your decisions and everything. But I found Pokemon Stadium boring in the end because it's, you know, you'd select, you know, Water Spout or whatever the hell those moves are. And then, or Water Gun, I'm sorry, that's what I'm thinking of. You know, Water Gun, and then he's, you know, the camera pans. Water Gun.
Right, and you watch and the whole animation.
You watch him, like, yeah, get all soaked, then you watch him all grumpy. Oh, fuck me. And then...
and then Pokemon are always saying that.
Yeah, they really are. And so I'm worried about that kind of thing happening. And in the trailer, it looks like that's kind of what's going on. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you still watch moves happen in the 2D Pokemon games, and it could be that quick.
Well, and it's totally conceivable that, I mean, the 2D games, you can either watch the little 2D animation or you can turn it off. So,
okay.
You know, I think with the when you turn it off in the 2D games, you know, you just kind of watch the two Pokemon just sort of standing there bopping around, and you just kind of see the text scrolling, and it says, you know, how much damage this does, or not really, but anyway, so it's conceivable that they could do that here. It would just be the text would be kind of scrolling and going along, and it's just sort of rotating around these two Pokemon bopping around, but now it's in 3D, right? So
yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's
at least possible, I think. Because yeah, that would suck. Because usually I leave the animations on for, you know, about the first maybe 70% of the game, and then eventually I just, you know, you get sort of into grind mode, and it's like, all right, we just gotta keep this moving, you know. So,
but you know, there's a lot to appreciate still. Although again, I'm still looking at the trailer right now, and there's this shot at the 23-second mark where the character is just running through a road, and you can see the city in the background, and the city looks great. The draw distance looks really nice. It's kind of exciting to see that. There's even like a little sign that says 3, which implies probably Route 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's still just as ridiculous to see these people standing there, not moving, staring at the road, hoping someone crosses their eyesight. So that might take a little minute to like readjust to, but the game
I wonder if maybe this is an early build, as they say, because even in the current game, like in this video, they're literally just standing there like statues. But even in the current games, they at least sort of wander around a little.
Some of them do.
You know, change the direction they're facing or whatever.
I guess I would appreciate like if they took time. And again, these are, I mean, here's the thing. Pokemon games at the core are about the battles and about collecting Pokemon. So really, does this matter for anything? No. But it would be cool if, per se, you know, if they have kind of the biker people, instead of them standing there, especially now that we're going into a 3D kind of area with the graphics, instead of standing there, maybe they're like kind of leaning back, and then they actually get up, like full, like kind of more animated, you know? So like,
sure.
Cross their path, then they get up and say, hey, blah, 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 blah.
Hey, you know? Motherfucker. Yeah. You and me is going to have a Pokemon battle.
And then when the Pokemon loses, he's like, oh, fuck me. You know?
Yep.
So, you know,
and
the owner
just shivs you.
That's a new, it's like the Sunstone, and then you've got a potion, and then you got a shiv.
Biker uses shiv. It's super effective.
Bulbasaur uses cut. Move fails, so Biker uses shiv. And cuts a motherfucker. Okay. Yeah, so, maybe that would be kind of cooler than just staticness. And you're right, it could be an early build, especially if they're going to have it done and for a worldwide release for October 2013.
Mm-hmm.
That implies that they must be pretty decently along, you know.
Moving along, yeah.
And there's a whole new freaking set of Pokemon.
I know.
We have the 3 starters, and that implies, you know, a whole new set of probably at least 100. And and then like 3 that you would never get unless you like go to a Japanese event. But
yep.
So it's cool. I'm excited. I'm happy with this more than I would be for like a remake of Ruby and Sapphire, which I know there was a lot of hope for that.
Yeah, I was really kind of split my hopes between Generation 6 announcement and a remake of Generation 3, because I have never played Generation 3. It's the only one I've never really played. So,
then you'd be happy if they just put it on the Virtual Console.
Yeah, that'd be okay. Well, I'd want to be able to transfer them.
Right.
So.
And frankly, it should be super easy for them.
Well,
you know, I mean, it's all in the same system now. You'd think that they could design that.
Yeah, you would hope. So now that this has been announced, like I don't know if they will ever do a remake of Generation 3, and it makes sense what a friend of mine, fellow Negative World Forum member, Mop It Up, was saying, is that, you know, they remade Generations 1 and 2 because you couldn't move those Pokemon forward.
Right.
You couldn't transfer, but Generation 3, you always could. So maybe they were never really so obsessed with remakes so much as they just wanted to make sure you could bring those Pokemon forward with you. So maybe there will never be a Generation 3 remake, in which case I will have to just plunk down the $40 and bite the bullet and get Emerald for Game Boy Advance.
At the same time, though, whose Game Boy Advance is readily accessible these days? It's still a very cumbersome process to get those Pokemon to whatever you're currently playing right now.
Well, I don't know what the process is. Like, I would be playing it on my DS Lite.
If I understood, you'd have to probably take your Game Boy Advance cartridge, find an old DS, use that to transfer it over, then take your DS cartridge and then use whatever means, another DS or the Wi-Fi connection or whatever, to transfer that to your current games. So it's like a three-step process.
See, I don't know about that, because you'd put both games in one system, right? In a DS Lite?
Yeah.
I think they can talk to each other that way. I don't know.
Well, that's, that's like one step. And then you have to send the Pokemon from your... You can't take like a Pokemon from Ruby and then wirelessly send it to your other one. You have to transfer it first.
Yeah, and I'm sure that much like even up through Generation 5, it's not like you can just be like, all right, click, send all my Pokemon. You know, you have to do like this arduous process. So,
And it'd be nice if the Pokemon Radar had something to do with this. They could upgrade that somehow so it has a little more value to it.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, because, like, I haven't touched the Pokemon Radar in forever. And because it only got me, you know, a few special Pokemon.
The Dream Radar?
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean.
Gotcha. I thought you were talking about, like, the in-game item.
No. I apologize for that. But, no, the Dream Radar, you know, the app for the 3DS.
Yeah, I would hope so. I would really hope
so. Just, you know, a free upgrade for those who have it, and then you can unlock Pokemon. And you don't have to change the gameplay, really. You just add a few Pokemon in there or a few items that you can only that are only relevant to this new game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, it is looking like that this game could potentially address two things that I brought up. I don't know. It was probably like maybe 2 months ago or something, we had a sort of conversation about like what I was hoping to see happen in the Pokemon franchise in the future. So the one of them I mentioned was if the moving through the world would be more like Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is sort of a step in that direction where it is like, instead of going to be like top down, you know, just viewing sort of like chess pieces on a grid, it's still, I think, on a grid, but it looks to be that you're moving through a more, I don't know how to put it, I guess just three-dimensional world.
Yeah.
And it's more akin to just sort of like looking from the perspective of your character to get around and everything, as opposed to just looking top down. So I'm very excited about that prospect. And the other thing is that one of the things that I've found most frustrating in the last two generations is, you know, you play online against random people and they always are using hacked Pokemon. It's not fair at all. And if you manage to beat them, then they just rage quit. But what could be really cool if it's on the 3DS is you could have the communities like you do in Mario Kart 7, where you could, you know, whoever would be arranging it, you know, there'd be some sort of control where, okay, well, people shouldn't be signing up or let into this community unless they're going to play a certain way.
Right.
You know? So that would make things so much better.
I totally can see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, are there other games besides Mario Kart 7 that makes use of communities like that, or is that just a Mario Kart 7?
I think there is, but I don't personally know because I haven't purchased any.
Okay.
So I'm not really a good person.
Because I feel like that was supposed to be a 3DS selling point, not just a Mario Kart 7 selling point, but I can't think of any other games.
Sure, it's kind of up to the developer, though, to implement.
Sure, absolutely. But yeah, that would be, oh my God. If they don't somehow have a better answer to the, you know, some more options to avoid, you know, the unfair random hackers who then just rage quit, that would be a severe deal breaker for me. So, But I hope they can do it. I mean, that's hopefully that should be half the point of having it on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm. So. Some other things, or one other thing anyway, that I want to note is the trailer is full of old Pokemon from other generations, particularly the first generation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. Like the Psyduck and Dratini, which are some of my favorites, are in the trailer. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to use them from the start. Not that I don't want to get to know the other, you know, the new Pokemon. Do you think that they're going to have a full 100?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
I bet they would probably get, you know, pitchforks and torches if they didn't, so.
Right. I guess, I mean, in a way, like, even if it was 50 in some respects, it would be, oh, that's a lot of new Pokemon. But
yeah.
It would feel like you're being shorted just because of what you've been used to. But
yep. Frankly, you know, like, yeah, I would be fine with, you know, I'd say 50 is probably enough. But yeah.
I just hope that it'll be all of them, though. Like,
you can always just put a toaster on a mule and you've got another Pokemon. I mean, how hard is it to come up?
Toaster on a mule?
Yeah.
Toasty ass?
Mulester.
Mulester? Okay.
Yeah.
Your name's more in line with what they would think of.
Yeah.
What Game Freak would like. I don't know. Like, I see Dratini, and that excites me because I love Dragonite. It's my number one favorite Pokemon. But I just hope. I don't know. It's kind of a bummer, and I've already gone through this in other times before. But I want to be able to like catch Zapdos and stuff again. You know, like I wish these elite Pokemon were not so freaking limited to like whatever the heck they're on originally. I wish there was I wish there was a way to catch them all within the same series.
Yeah. Well, they do usually sort of like bring them back in cycles.
I just feel like it's too much to freaking know, though. Like, I have to use a guide just to see, okay, ones are in this one, which one's in this one. It's just too much work that I don't have the time or nor want to use the time to do it.
True.
And maybe for that I don't deserve to have them all, but...
you're not worthy.
Like, to have Serebii.net, like, bookmarked on my Wii U or my phone, like it currently is, just because I will need to reference that so much when I'm playing the game, if I'm playing outside of my house. It's almost annoying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I think it depends on your perspective or whatever, because I do it all the time, and I don't really mind, but I can understand how it would be a little frustrating.
Maybe if I just clear my backlog once and for all and have nothing but Pokemon to play, then I'll have more time to actually, like, sit down with this crap. And
well, whatever. But no, I mean, you know, you shouldn't have to do that. I mean, you're doing this for fun and amusement. So if it ever gets to the point where it feels like work, then that's not cool.
Right.
So, but yeah. But, like, I mean, for instance, you know, in Black and White 2, like, I'm very excited. I never... like I said, didn't play Generation 3, so I never got a chance to catch the Regis. And, you know, slowly but surely I'm going to be able to do that given that release. So, you know, I'm happy with that sort of doling them out, you know, sort of rotating between this set and that set and the different generations. You know, it's okay with me.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, they usually will do some sort of event. I mean, that's the only way I got Mewtwo was through an event, because I think the only other games that he was actually in were way before I started playing. So, yep.
All right, so let's move on to the starters.
The starters, yes.
And also the legendaries. Because the trailer shows all five,
mm-hmm.
and that's cool. And I think they all look good. I think this is, like, since the first generation, this might be my favorite generation for this, frankly.
It is, yeah. It is pretty cool that it looks like they managed to pull off three cool-looking starters right from the get-go. Because I think usually it's, like, there's always one where you're like, but
so, there's, you know, there's the three in a disappointing move. To some, there's just three, you know, your grass, your water, your fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, the same old starting types. Mm-hmm. Do you think that was a smart move?
In my opinion, it's not smart or dumb. I mean, I think
this is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it is. I think for as many people who might be disappointed at the sameness of it, I have to believe that there would be even more people disappointed, you know, saying like... Well, yeah, and in this case, not even necessarily just because of change, but, like, I think because with Pokemon, there's such a, like, dare I say, emotional attachment that I think there's a lot of players out there who are like, oh, but I always start with a fire type, you know?
Right. Oh, and that's true. I mean,
yeah,
people have complained, oh, I always start off with this type, but I don't know if I want to because I don't like the way it looks.
Right.
I guess maybe it'd be cool if, like, a second in-game event happened where everyone has to get another Pokemon. Whether you keep it or not, it's irrelevant. But, you know, you get to, again, have the same type or, like, another kind of type cycle, and then your rival will get the type that is not that or something.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
It was really ineloquent what I just said.
I still got it. But, you know, I will say, because they usually, well, not usually, but sometimes, and this is, like, totally lacks a pattern, that they will, you know, as they evolve, they become multi-type.
Yeah.
But only some of them do, and it's, like, totally random. I guess it's usually fire and fighting, but that's, like, the only consistency at all. I'm gonna throw out a guess right now, just based on that frog and the way he's holding his hand up to his head.
That he's psychic.
Psychic.
Yeah.
That's something. Plus, he just looks like a brainiac, doesn't he? Like, doesn't he look like a
little Poindexter action going on?
Yeah, like those little things. It kind of looks like little glasses on his nose there, and he looks like he's got like puffy white professor hair and stuff. So
looks more colonial to me. Maybe he's like
I could see that
Ben Franklin,
too.
You know?
Good point. So then maybe electric then.
Hmm. No, I think the psychic one's a better spot for you to go on that. But so then if that was to be the case. I don't know if this is the case in other games, but did the secondary types ever clash, or is it just kind of whatever it wants to be?
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, like, okay, so blue, water obviously beats fire, fire beats grass, and grass beats water. So if the frog here is, you know, water and psychic, then does that mean that the Fennec Fox should be fire and then whatever psychic is strong against?
I see what
like
you mean.
Bug, although that doesn't make any sense, but
I think the short answer is no. I think when they start doing the multi-type evolutions, then the like outright strength, the straightforward rock paper scissors thing just goes out the window.
Right.
So, but the way that the way effectiveness works, which I only sort of dawned on me very recently, is that like when you have multi-type, it's each value is a multiplication.
Mm-hmm.
So like the same strengths and weaknesses sort of carry over, you know, to some extent, which I guess is obvious for, as I'm saying it. But so it's not like all the advantages, you know, would go completely out the window. They would just be sort of possibly compromised in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see.
You thought you were ineloquent.
We're just a couple of ineloquent. See, I can't even say it. Gosh, dang. We're a couple of ineloquent bastards.
But I think we all know that the fire type fox will eventually evolve into a browser type. Ba-dum-tsh.
Into a browser type.
Yep.
Into a Mozilla.
Yep.
That'll be the name of the final form.
Oh, that'll be its special move.
Mozilla.
Mozilla software update. Would you like to restart later?
So now, does that mean that the water type will turn out to be like Internet Explorer with the blue and everything, and it'll just stop working after level 40?
Right, know? It'll just be really finicky.
It'll just stop working. It'll get viruses. It'll get the Pokeros, naturally. No, but it's a virus of a virus, so it actually will deactivate the Pokeros.
Oh,
or Poke,
that sucks.
Whatever. And then green. What can green be?
Well, apparently he's like a hedgehog, so
really?
Maybe some kind of Sega tie-in.
He just got halfway cooler.
Yeah, well, I was looking on Bulbapedia, because of course everyone has already dissected these, and I guess the Japanese name, which I'm sure you are very familiar with, of Hirunezumi means hedgehog.
Hmm.
So.
Cool.
Anyway.
Hedgehogs are cool.
Hedgehogs are cool. I'm definitely a lot of times I like the grass starter types, and I'm definitely leaning towards him this time around. Do you have a favorite?
I definitely have a favorite, but it doesn't go by my history of the games, because I started off with Bulbasaur many, many moons ago, and I've always loved grass Pokemon for that. I've loved Bulbasaur in general. I remember choosing Chikorita, I think, was like, was that the
three?
Huh?
Oh, no, that was Generation 2, yeah.
And that was that the starting Pokemon, or was that an evolution? Mm-hmm. I forget. Okay.
Yep, that's the
start. Like, I went with that. I went with Leaf, or Green Grass, for a long time, and then I did change it up over the years now, and in replays, I've changed it up as well, so I don't really have a type anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But for this one, I definitely need to go with Fennekin, because I freaking love Fennec Foxes.
And okay, what does that mean exactly?
A Fennec Fox is a type of fox. It's like a desert fox.
And
they look
okay.
Pretty cool. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I think the Keaton might be kind of based off of Fennec type fox. Like the Keaton mask and Zelda
sure,
and stuff.
Sure.
But look them up. They're adorable. And so I've always loved those animals. And so to see this kind of badass fire Fennec Fox is pretty cool. I mean, but Froakie looks really cool too. Like, I like frogs. I like Poliwhirl is one of my favorite Pokemon.
Absolutely. And
so it's kind of cool to see a more normal looking frog there, or a toad, or I guess a frog. but now you say, you know, Chespin, who I wouldn't say isn't bad Pokemon at all. He just wouldn't be the one I'd go for first. Yet now that you say he's a hedgehog, he's even cooler. And I kind of like he's more like a. He's just a badass. He's got like a hood on, you know, like a green cap, you know?
Yep.
And so I think,
yeah,
like
not,
I said.
I'm not crazy about I don't know what's going on with the cap there, but the rest of him, I think.
Well, I think it's his whole body, because you can see like a little bit behind him and his tail
right.
is green. So it's just the back of him, which you'll see a lot of in this game, I'm sure.
That's true.
At least if the past games have anything to say about it. But my only concern with Fennekin is that it's a little too Vulpix-like.
Yes.
With an Eevee, like if Eevee and Vulpix had a baby. And so it's one of the more unoriginal looking ones, but it's a really nice design still. And I think that the final evolution will be cool enough for my own imagination to warrant its, you know.
Yeah. Now, I don't think even when Generation 5 was announced, I was not, you know, I had played Generation 4 Pokemon, but I was not really of the mode where, you know, like this time around where I'm like, you know, waiting to see like the drips of information. So when they announced Generation 5, do you know if when they showed the starters, if they just showed the original evolutions or did they show all the evolutions at once?
I think they showed the original only and then the other ones kind of came out as the Japanese version released and such.
Gotcha. Okay. Because, you know, when you look back, I don't know. I think probably Generation 5 more than any of the others. Like, if you look at how they start and how they finish, it's really, really different.
No, and I think Generation 5 was the most drastic of the cases, too. Like, Tepig or whatever. I like, you know, he looks pretty cute as a starter, but then he turns into, like, a sumo wrestler or, like, a wrestler in general. Then he turns into, like, a mariachi dancer. I don't know what the hell. But like Oshawott, I loved Oshawott, and that's what I started with, and I definitely went to water for that generation, but I was not a fan at all of the later evolutions.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you can't keep it as the starter because then they're going to be much weaker because your base stats jump like crazy when you evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So I only ever keep my Pokemon unevolved until like I get the move that I definitely wanted early enough, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, and then I'm like, okay, go for it. So it is kind of a shame to see that. And actually, Tepig, I think, evolved to actually a pretty cool-looking dude. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, we really don't know what these could look like.
It's kind of fun right now to just sort of like, let your imagination wander and think what they could look like. But
especially if you're talking dual types, too. Like, Froakie, if he's a psychic, like, could he resemble Alakazam, maybe? Because he kind of does now, just in his poses and stuff, that whole thing.
Somehow get a spoon in there.
Yeah. So who knows? I mean, but that's the whole point of like why I wanted to talk about this announcement today. And hopefully our discussion, as perhaps disjointed as it can be at times, though, I think we're doing okay.
Who cares?
Yeah, I really don't give a shit. I think that it's just fun to speculate. That is just, that's why we're on Negative World, right? I mean, that's to discuss. We're a bunch of nerds who discuss Nintendo, especially Pokemon at this moment in this particular topic. It's just what we do. And I love letting my imagination run, you know.
Yeah, so. And I don't know if this has been the case in the past, but I'm glad that, you know, we only have to wait 9 months about. Yeah. So.
Well, and it's going to come quick. I mean, we're currently, you know, waiting for E3, and then when that hits, then it's like, okay, now there's only 5 months or whatever.
Yep.
So And this whole time there's going to be other games coming out, and it'll be easy to kind of have it sneak up on us.
Yeah. We should also probably mention that with the title of the games, X and Y, it seems fairly obvious that,
G is
going to
be
Z.
The... Oh, Z? Oh. Yeah, no, totally. Z is totally going to be it. And
yeah, and then it's a whole 3D thing.
Yeah, the three axes.
See, Steven, I'm not sure if you caught that.
What if the game's in 2D axes. And the 3D doesn't work until you buy Z and then suddenly turn 3D in the system?
Oh, boy.
Dick move, Nintendo. You haven't even done it, but dick move.
Suck.
but that would, that makes a lot of sense. You know, or maybe they'll have X2 and Y2, and then, or Y squared, X squared.
Ooh.
You know, Pokemon Calculus, that'll be an offshoot game.
Yeah.
Because Black and White never had a gray.
Nope. You know?
So they want to throw us the curveball.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, what's really also exciting, besides the starters, jumping back towards the characters for a second.
Oh, yes.
The legendaries look badass. Mm-hmm. They just look cool.
I think especially the bird one, the flying one, looks pretty cool. The other one, I like how he's got sort of the sword legs. It's kind of interesting and badass. I think he's got probably a few too many horns for my taste, but they are sparkly, pretty rainbow horns. So that's something.
Yeah. No, I think it's cool. I like. It kind of looks like in the still that I'm looking at, like lightning is shooting from the sky and zapping his head. But no.
Well, I'm wondering the way he sort of, the bird sort of looks down and then he sort of looks up. I'm wondering if they are like rivals.
They could be rivals.
No,
you know what? This is a total nerdy moment here, but the deer Pokemon or whatever reminds me of like Harry Potter.
Oh, the Patronus.
Yeah. There you go.
Gotcha.
And that's Harry Potter's Patronus was that deer. And and that played a very pivotal role in one of the stories. But so it kind of reminds me of that. It's pretty cool. But
yeah.
Yeah, so it's cool. I just hope that in this case that we don't have some half-baked Team Rocket type thing. You know, I don't want to have a group who's trying to either liberate or capture the...
Oh, really?
The great, you know, legendary Pokemon kind of thing.
Hmm. Well...
What?
I hate to disappoint you, but I'm pretty sure they will.
Really? Is there like a plot detail, or are you just saying this? Cause...
No, they just always do. So.
Ah, gosh damn it.
But, you know, they probably are running out of cool team names since they did Plasma.
Plasma Rocket.
Get ready for Team Mustard coming to you October.
It'll probably be Team Z, you know.
Oh, maybe.
But even that's kind of lame.
Team Axis, and it'll be like a whole World War II thing.
Anyway, yeah. You know, I mean, with that, we've kind of exhausted, you know, what we have to say based on a little trailer and a snippet of news.
Yeah.
I don't want to retread too much on our previous Pokemon topic. So any last comments about this?
Nope. Looks good. Can't wait.
No last comment, Joe. That's what they call you.
That's what they call me.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say besides. See, my nickname could be Last Second Hype Steve.
Okay.
Because I'm always the guy who's like, well, you know, my last comment, I'm looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't wait for it, which is the same thing. But
yep.
I think it'll be cool. I think it'll be different enough to where it'll be feel fresh. There's going to be new Pokemon. I'm psyched.
I think so.
I'm like an American Idol judge. I just like everything.
Me too.
Or I guess I'm like Paul Abdul in that sense.
Right.
God, that's like a 10-year-old joke.
Eh.
I think that
I've
means
I've always felt you were like Paul Abdul just in general, so.
And you've seen pictures of me in high school, didn't you?
You're always dancing with cartoon cats and everything. Now that's like a 20-year-old joke.
Well, before we get into the 1800s here, I think we should just wrap it up.
All right, let's do that.
So, you know, that's another episode of the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please comment on the podcast and help us fuel the discussion post-episode. And you can do that by going to negativeworld.org. You just got to find the thread that I'll post of the episode when it's done. And if you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, you can reach us through the Facebook page and just got to search for negativeworld.org on Facebook. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @negative_world. And as always, there's that you can subscribe to that enhanced podcast.
I do it.
You do. I do it too, but that's only because I have to make sure it works. every time I upload the episode. So, but yeah, no, I take the time to put a few chapters in there anyway. And, so hopefully, some of you guys like that out there, but you can have either or MP3 or the enhanced. And, yeah, Joe, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Any last words, Joe? All right. See you guys.
I wouldn't be no last comment, Joe, if I did.
Well, I think this was a great podcast because I always got I don't even remember my nickname.
Paula Abdul Finkelstein.
Paula Finkelstein.
Abdul Jabbar.
I was going to say that. God, we're nerds. Okay. You guys have a wonderful day, week, night, whatever the hell time you listen to this, Joe.
Take it easy.
I'll see you.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Now is the portion of the podcast where I will regale you with my prepared monologue. The topic for this monologue is pizza bites. Pizza bites are delicious. The thing about pizza bites is that they're like pizza, but in little bite-sized packages. And those packages are edible. They are pizza crust or something like pizza crust. They actually kind of taste more like egg rolls, but that's fine. It's an East meets Mediterranean combination, and it's heavenly. Now, the ones that we have are Totino's Pizza Bites, which, as far as I know, is the first and last name, literally last name, in pizza bite technology. I could probably eat an entire bag at one sitting, but thankfully my wife limits me to a third of a bag at a time. She forces me to ration them out, which is good because then they last me longer than one evening. You know that they're just in the freezer there waiting, something to look forward to. So I guess this leads me to the next logical conclusion, which is why more foods don't come in bite form. Now, there is the revelation of the slider in the burger world, which is similar, but it's the differences that really make the slider inferior. And those differences are that, for instance, it is not completely encased in the bread. So you can still have the contents just fall right out. Plus, if you put a bunch of sliders together, which is normally how you would get sliders, it's basically just like eating a burger. So you might as well just have a burger. Whereas a collection of pizza bites is still entirely different than a slice of pizza. So I guess what I'm trying to say is pizza bites are good. Pizza is good. Sliders are disappointing. Mega Man is cool. Thank you for joining me on this first of what will undoubtedly be many installments of Ninsage's monologues about nothing. Thank you.